something to go to. So let's go ahead and get started. Everybody ready? All right. President Buchanan, we were talking about AML funding.
Mr. Chairman, picking up on Appendix B, page 29 of the handout, I believe we discussed the STEM facility and the SER forward funding. The next two items relate to the GE gasification project, the HBG ATC. The first is what I would refer to as startup or non-operational funds, which are not eligible for the match, but we know will occur in the next couple of years. And the fourth item is a $5 million request for the first year of operations funding for the HBG ATC. You'll recall that the relationship with GE is a 50-50 match for the construction, but in the benefit of GE, they will receive 7 years of prepaid leases out of their first $50 million contribution. So the state of Wyoming will be responsible for the O&M. And we know that bill will be coming true. We don't know when. It will probably be in FY14 or FY15. It's an identification of available funds now and if the legislature desired to set those funds aside.
Sure. To that project.
Mr. Chairman, a permit has been submitted to the Department of Environmental Quality for air and land quality issues. It is in what I would describe as the latter stages of their review. Then that will go up for public review. There is also on the construction side, in this calendar year, there will be a RFP for the final construction of that facility going out, and that selection will occur middle part of 2011.
So my question would be then, do you expect this to be up and running in 2014-ish? Is that, and then I have a follow-up on that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Von Flatern, that's our best estimate right now is 2014. There are a number of external issues that could change that schedule.
And so, Mr. Chairman, so why wouldn't this be appropriate for next budget to put in for the $5 million operating costs instead of 3 years ahead of time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Von Flatern, you're absolutely correct. We could put it in the next biennium. This is essentially the trend we've submitted with our AML funds, recognizing that this is likely to be the last year of AML funds, so these funds will go away. And an attempt to set aside funds now for known expenses in the future. If we don't support this, we will be back at some point when the first year is there.
Mr. Chairman, if I might add to that, the other funding, the $1,050,000 that's listed directly above that, those are funds that, in fact, we will need before that. And that's because when this project is complete, we will need to have a staff that is operational and can with that facility, and that means we need to bring them on during the construction phase.
Run by that, by again, which funding?
That was item three, the $1,050,000.
$5 million is flexible, but the $1,050,000 you need.
And, Mr. Chairman, the last item of the AML funds is located on page 30, Romanet 5, $6.2 million for graduate stipends related to the area of energy science. The committee, when we met in December 15th of last year, I believe articulated an interest to outline what the state would be getting as a result of those stipends and what parameters the university would impose upon those stipends. And you can see paragraphs A through D articulate that we would spend no more than $1 million a year, what type of disciplines would be eligible for the funds, minimum grade point average, graduate examinations for qualifying students, and reporting requirements back to the legislature.
How is this tying in, if at all, to the existing programs that we have in the going out through the School of Energy Research? We've got funding out for a variety of different things that we've created that the Minerals Committee has been watching. Or is it independent of that?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Mr. Chairman, I on the, there was a comment made just as we were breaking at lunch by Mr. Richards and company about the AML funds being this calendar year. And I just like a reiteration of that by you. And also, you meant calendar year, not fiscal year, and they may, so the 12 numbers aren't shared.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Von Platern, I think it is probably best described on page 29 at the top. This language is written to the extent federal fiscal year. So federal fiscal year is October 1, 2011, or 2010 through September 30th, 2011. Funds are resulting and available for continuing appropriation of AML. Then these appropriations would become effective. We don't know what federal fiscal year 2011 funds will be available because Congress has imposed subsequent continuing resolutions, so they have not passed their budget for the year. Beyond 2011, I am very skeptical relative to the availability of any future AML funds, although the state deserves three more years of those.
The funds that we're applying for now, are they locked in or they're still requiring a reauthorization act?
Mr. Chairman, there is a mandatory continuing appropriation that is on the books in federal statute. But just like you folks can change statute through a budget bill, they could do the same in March. So I would say it's a mandatory expenditure. We could submit an application today, and I've talked to DEQ about that, and we would expect them to approve it. But just like this legislature, the Appropriations Committee and Congress could modify that.
$2 million for graduate stipends and fellowships. My question just is, I mean, how do these get administered just through your standard process where is there a committee that's going to review these, or do we have, is it intended that these would be more oriented to the private sector, or it's, what do we have in mind?
Mr. Chairman, this similar question was asked, and we provided a response in writing. It is question number 11. Question number 8 says, briefly summarize how UW would raise the stature of AML-funded graduate assistantships on our handout, but just to summarize.
Page 30.
Just to summarize briefly, the Office of Academic Affairs would distribute those funds, and the departments would apply to the Office of Academic Affairs based upon the relative work which would be done, its relation to the state of Wyoming's economy, its relation to energy research. And then if the department was successful, for example, the Department of Chemical and Petroleum Engineering, then they would be allocated X number of graduate assistantships, which would be paid for by these funds. The individual candidates would not be the ones making the requests.
Any preference for, since these are AML funds, any preference for the energy industry or related industries?
Senator Nicholas, yes, they're all limited to Wyoming Energy.
Mr. Chairman, the next item I would refer you to, page 19. You may recall that last year when we met with this committee, we had an extended discussion about the WAMI Medical Education Program, and a request from this committee that we explore with the University of Washington the possibility and the cost associated with increasing WAMI enrollments from its current level of 16 students per year up to 20 students per year. We did pursue that discussion with the University of Washington. You will find letters in the packet of materials from Paul Ramsey, who is the dean of the medical school at the University of Washington, responding to our inquiries and informing us that the University of Washington has four additional seats that it will allocate to the University of Wyoming effective this coming fall of 2011, if we are so inclined. We followed up with information about the cost of that. Remember that implementation on these things takes multiple years. We have 4 years of medical students that are folded in, so the first year, if we went to 20 this year, we would have 3 years of 16, 1 year of 20. The second year would ratchet up to 2 years of 20, 2 years of 16. Year three, we'd have 3 years. So the cost to put in place 20 seats, it takes a full class before you've implemented that full increase. On page 19 of your handout, you can see what those costs would be. For us in FY12, were we to do this, since we teach the first year of medical school on our campus, we have the capacity, I've checked with the program, we have the capacity to handle four additional students at no extra cost to us for this first year. If we sustain that, there are some relatively minor support and additional teaching costs we would need. We have four students per cadaver, and this would require an additional cadaver, amongst other things, in the facilities for that. But the real cost comes with the additional seats in the WAMI medical program when those students are in Seattle. And you can see the first year, which would be year two, the cost would be $311,000, and that ratchets up over the implementation cycle. Those figures, I think it will also tell you in this document that part of the contract with the University of Washington includes increases associated with the CPI, Consumer Price Index, that are automatic in that contract, that increase at the notification of the University of Washington. It's not an inexpensive move to do this. After full implementation, we figure it would be close to $1 million a year more to the WAMI program to bump us from 64 seats to 80 seats, which would be the 20 per year capacity that we would then have. We have a 75% return rate on WAMI students to Wyoming to practice medicine. If they practice medicine in Wyoming for 3 years, we forgive their loan. And if not, they repay that loan, and that loan then is used to help support other medical students.
With respect to that 75% return rate, is that have we started to see what's happening to the subspecialties, or are we just seeing the family practice ones come back yet? In terms of years of education, are we?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's fair to say that the overwhelming majority of the folks who are returning are family practice physicians. I think that was our intention all along. For those who opt for specialties, frequently they have to look to large urban areas for the volume in their practice to accommodate that. So, for example, if it were an orthopedic surgeon, I would tell you far more likely for us to lose that individual than a family practice physician who are most likely to return to Laramie, or excuse me, to Wyoming.
Mr. Chairman.
Questions on the...
Mr. Chairman, just President, just a question on the 75% return rate for 3 years. Do you have any... first of all, two questions. The 3 years, and how did we kind of come up with that? I mean, three as opposed to five. Obviously, our state interest is to get them here and keep them here. And, you know, the longer they're here, the more the roots are put down, those kind of things. So the three versus another number, maybe four or five. And then the second part, do we have any info on after 3 years? I mean, is the 75% just they're just coming here to pay their penance, to get their bill paid, and then, boom, they're out of the state?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have those specific data for you, but I can tell you that it's been our experience that both with residents and with physicians that the first place they land when they exit medical school is usually where they wind up. but we don't have that for you in hard data. And I forgot your first question.
Just on the 3 years versus a longer time period.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't have an answer for you. I would say history is the answer to that. 3 was determined to be the appropriate length of time for the payback. And in fact, it appears to be adequate to keeping those physicians in Wyoming after that 3 year period. We see very little attrition for those who choose to come back. We do lose 1 out of 4 who opt not to, and they do return the loan.
And how much is that loan again, just to refresh the committee? How much do we have invested in each individual?
On the average, about $250,000,
yeah.
Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Buchanan, this kind of goes to the reliability of the 20 slots. I'm wondering, are the other 4 slots made available primarily through an expansion of the Washington program, or is that program the same size and these slots are just available because they became available for other reasons?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the medical school at Washington went through an accreditation process that was concluded this summer. They did expand their total program. The other participating states, Alaska, Montana, Idaho, already send 20 students per year and pay for it. I know there are other states that are interested in expanding theirs. We have been on their, what I would consider their wait list, for some time to expand our program. Our number was selected, so we, as I would describe it, we have first shot at those new 4 slots. If we don't take them, I'm confident others will.
Just one last question. When then do we have to give them the word whether we're in or not on the 4 more slots? When do we have to make a decision?
Mr. Chairman, this would be effective fall of 2011. Sometime this spring we'd have to affirm our intentions.
With respect to the payback on the money coming back, you said something. Does it go into the revert to lower our appropriation, or are you using the money to augment student services?
Mr. Chairman, the dollars that are recouped, I believe this is since program inception, the payback dollars come back to the university, and they have been reinvested in scholarship support and other forms of support, both for students who are in the program and students with financial need who would make application to the program.
These are medical students.
Mr. Chairman, for example, there are a series of examinations through the medical school process that carry a bill with them. We pick up that cost with these funds. Otherwise, the students would be having to pick up those costs.
Students always say it's pretty nice to have them. I know they say that, but as we start increasing the numbers, do we need, maybe it's appropriate to at least look what this recovery rate is and whether or not 25% or 30% of larger numbers is warranted for that. So maybe why don't you provide to us, if you will, later time, an assessment of how much you're recouping now. My assessment is it's probably going to go up, and what the proposal is to see whether or not it's a whether we ought to reevaluate some of that, ought to go back to the reduce the general fund obligation.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think the way that process works is once each year a determination is made of the amount of money that the University of Wyoming students or the Wyoming students, how much they will pay out of their own pocket, and then whatever remains is the loan authorization which they agree to. So as costs increase, we can distribute that in part on increased student costs and in part on loans to be repaid or some combination of those two, but that's handled on a yearly basis.
The loans then become revolving. They come back into the, assuming they're repaid. Maybe I just give us an explanation of what that process is, and if it's building a bigger fund, that's fine. But I think we just need to know what, have some idea of what those payback dollars are doing, what the long-term benefit is of maintaining what we're doing.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, be happy to provide that.
The WAMI program? If not, next item.
Mr. Chairman, if the Appropriations Committee desires to expand that, the language is offered in Appendix D to expand the WAMI program from 16 to 20 students. And I believe the last appendices, which we have not touched base on, was an additional funds for matching program or endowment or facilities matching program. This was not a University of Wyoming request. Nonetheless, Governor Friedenthal, in his budget recommendation, included $3.5 million for endowment challenge funds. And on page 37, we have drafted a draft Section 300, which would accomplish that appropriation for the University of Wyoming if the Appropriations Committee felt supportive.
Bring us up to speed on where you are. How much have you used up all your endowment challenge accounts, and what's out there? And
Mr. Chairman, we have used all but a couple million dollars. I have held those back, and we are using them right now with specific donors who have the capacity to use up all of those. We expect those dollars will be gone within the next several months.
What is your burn rate, if you will? I mean, how much of these are you generally matching in a year?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that we can match with confidence close to $15 million a year.
What's the total amount that do you have it memorized, what the total amount of matching dollars we've over the course of the program that we've put out?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's about $140 million in total. That would be between athletics facilities match, university facilities match, and university endowment match.
Are there any funds out there that we put restrictions on that aren't being utilized or aren't being...
Mr. Chairman, no.
Chairman, just where have you found, you've got a feel kind of for these three areas, athletic facilities and the endowment. Where do you need the, you say the $15 million is the burn rate, but where do you need it most?
Mr. Chairman, today I would tell you that the athletic department is working on future planning, which we think will identify some needs. But at this point, they don't have things that are queued up that they are raising funds for. So I think that's something not likely to occur in the next couple of years. I think the two areas where we need the most, certainly endowments, that allows us to work largely on scholarship programs for students. And this year we've been emphasizing the non-traditional. Facilities matching funds for the remodeling and renovation of existing facilities would be my second priority. I think we don't have any prospects, nor are we soliciting donors right now in the magnitude of building additional facilities on campus. But we do have plenty that have the capacity to help us renovate and remodel and refurbish what we do have.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we have two more items to discuss. The first is on page 27, and this was discussed in your December 15th meeting, but since I have the appendix language here for you, I just thought I'd draw your attention to it. It is a rather minor modification which would extend a prior appropriation for uranium to be used through 2013 rather than through 2011. These competitive research grants are taking some time for completion, and they will not, in all likelihood, be able to meet this year's deadline. hopefully we get support from all of the members. Mr. Chairman, the last item we have, unless the committee has any questions, would be in the area of salary increases. I would direct your attention to page 25 of our second handout, which is our responses to all of your questions in December. And Doug Van Zandt may take my place up here if you have any further questions. But in short, the committee asked in December what would it take to bring up UW classified staff as well as faculty to 94% of market. And so the spreadsheet on page 25 illustrates the variety of comparators that we used, as well as the amount of money of average salary for UW staff, as well as average salaries for the comparators, and how we would spend the $5 million that is included in Governor Friedenthal's recommendation, but not Governor Meade's. Page 25 of the second handout.
What would be the amount if it was 90% of market?
I don't know off the top of my head, but we can
get that
run that calculation.
Please? I think that's the new target is now 90 and not 94, if you'll get that for us later.
Mr. Chairman, I would note on page 25 that we have made considerable progress in elevating salaries over the last 5 years or so, and you can note that the percentage of the mean right now, we have our associates and our assistant professors as well as our classified staff are at 90% of the mean.
It's not geometric or lineal because of that. So if you get us to 90% figure so that we can see what it looks like. And also let us know, if you would, what employee would likely get it, whether it is faculty, staff, administration, that sort of thing. That makes sense to you?
How those funds would be dispersed?
If you use the 90%.
Certainly we can do that. I would tell you that from our current estimates and our look at the salary distributions at the university, were the Governor Friedenthal's recommendations to be adopted, would not be our intention to distribute all of those funds proportional to the shortfall of each of the different categories. And the reason why, I think, is evident on that page. Our administrative staff, and there are about 30 of them, are the folks who are the furthest below the mean. To bring them up, they're also the most expensive, to bring them up to 90% of market, or 94% of market as originally proposed, would be an unreasonable increase for that group at the expense of some of the other groups in the university, and it would not be our intention to elevate administrative salaries up to 90 and hold back increases for the other category. So what we gave you in the governor's recommendation category is our estimated proportion of how we would distribute those funds across the categories. Were they there?
And then, McKimmy, folks, if you're not aware, the salaries above 90 or $100,000 are here. Anytime you want to come look at them, you just come to my desk, take them with you. But one of the things I think that we do see is that for the administrative staff, at the salaries they're fairly significant when compared to other state salaries. So you have a different scale against which you set your salaries, we understand, but it's still significant. So those are issues to be, I guess, understood and talked about. So If you would give us the come back with, you know, I don't know whether you were, when you went from 11 to 5, is
11 was the $11 million was the amount necessary to elevate all categories to the 94%. That was the original target.
Okay. And 5 was the Gov's rec. And then, so the 5 was just done. Was that the governor's rec based upon just divide it in half, or did he? Was there a rationale?
Not the same.
Why don't you sit here?
Mr. Chairman, the $5 million distribution in the governor's recommended amount column, as President Buchanan alluded, we did not identify the dollars needed to bring each group to 94% in that column, because it would have resulted in much higher values going to the administrative group than the others. So what we did was to simply spread the $5 million so that there would be the same pool, about 3.7%, available for each of the four groups. In other words, we showed you what the gaps were, but because we didn't want to end up in a situation where we're putting significantly more money to the administrative group, we just used the same percentage for each of the four groups to spread the $5 million.
On, excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your page 25, you've got the EW percent of mean over there, but we don't have any percentages, or is that the percent after the $5 million governor's rec, or is that the current percentage? And if it isn't the governor's rec, could we have those percentages after you've applied the $5 million?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the UW percent of mean is prior to any salary adjustment being made. So these data are from 2009-10, and they are the same for both UW in terms of being the same data set for UW and for all the comparison groups. And they reflect our position before any salary adjustment is done. And, yes, we could certainly show you, if we applied the governor's rec amounts, how it would move where UW is in relation to the mean. We can certainly do that.
Other questions on page 25, issue with respect to market raises? Okay, next item.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that concludes our testimony.
Did everybody get all their questions answered? If not, thank you, or if so, thank you very much. Appreciate it, President Cannon, and I'll talk to you later about, Don, about whether we want to have you here for the executive session on property acquisition. All right, the next item is community colleges. Yeah, I think we just decide whether we get any and then decide what we're going to do there. There it is. Dr. Rose, you're not a real doctor like your son. You got the floor. Take us through.
Mr. Co-Chairman, I think your practice has been in the past to sort of really begin at the place where our budget is explained and our supplemental exception budget request is made. That begins on page 9. The narrative begins on page 9, and the explanation of it occurs on page 10 and 11. I'll try to be sure I have my glove on. Mr. Chairman, we actually only have two requests. One was a $6.85 million request that is in conformance with state statute that directs the commission to bring forward exception budget requests for additional instructional expenses as a result of increased enrollment. And these are enrollments that have accrued to the colleges since our last appropriation, and so that $6.85 million figure reflects enrollment growth to bring us to the current period and to the end of the 2012 fiscal year, or the current biennium. As you've noted, the governor's recommendation was to modify that request and reduce the actual appropriation to a $3.4 million appropriation, whereas the commission's request is for a one-time request, which conforms again to the directive in state law. The governor's choice was to award $3.4 million, but on a biennialized basis, so that $3.4 million would become part of the standard budget.
Correct with respect to item number, priority number one, pages 9 and 10 of the budget. Okay, next item.
Mr. Chairman, I do have some additional information for you that in the discussion this morning there were questions about the sinking fund, and I'll try to answer questions specific to the community colleges with regard to that. But the last part of the commission's request, and I will ask General Manager Ruby Calvert to present the Wyoming Public Television's request.
President Buchanan about the construction management issues. If he's still here, you ask him to hang around and we'll take him back up before we go in.
Mr. Co-Chairman, on page 20 of your budget is an explanation for the Early Childhood Learning Center at Casper College. This is a request only for authorization in conformance to statute that requires any expenditure for capital construction by the community colleges that exceeds $1 million requires your authorization. This is not a request for funding. This is merely a request to you to permit Casper College to expend $1.4 million on the construction of their Early Childhood Learning Center. This came as a consequence of actual costs that were encountered after the commission had assembled their budget, and this came into the budget as a consequence of actual bids having been received and over and above the amount that was initially anticipated. So this is, as I said, a request solely for authorization and would appear also in the budget document. And if you will permit me, Mr. Co-Chair, we've been requested by Northern Wyoming Community College District, and I've supplied copies to the staff to distribute. On the Sheridan College campus, and you heard something about this morning, the University of Wyoming is collaborating with Northern Wyoming Community College District and the Sheridan College campus to construct a joint facility that would be used for agricultural education in Sheridan. And to this point, the commission has received that request, but they received the request in October, which was after the commission's budget was assembled and submitted to the budget division, so it didn't appear in the in the commission's budget request, but Northern Wyoming Community College District would like to be able to proceed with that. As was explained this morning, the Whitney Foundation is providing some funding, and they are in the process of working with the university on that project, and so they would like, once again, legislative approval solely for authorization. There's no funding associated with it, and so that would be an additional request that doesn't appear in your budget document, and in fact, I just received a request this morning. But
on that, where's the source of funds going to come from? Because as I understood it, the Whitney Foundation was looking for general funds to augment what they had in mind. So now, where's the money's going to come from?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't been apprised. The commission wasn't apprised when they approved the project in October as to the source of funds, but it's the commission's responsibility solely to give consideration to projects that exceed $100,000, and so that was the commission's approval. I think Dr. Paul Young is here from Northern Wyoming Community College District, and he may be able to tell you more specifically what they anticipate in a request, but this is really just the first step in a process that they would have to, I believe, have your approval to proceed with, since they are collaborating with the university and they are in the process of acquiring land and proceeding in a project that, by state statute now, they have to have your authorization to go forward with.
Well, my inclination, I mean, ordinarily, we don't let things come in this late. It's got to go to the governor's office, go through the governor's, and he can send up a letter. So I guess, I mean, if a member wants and to make sure that we're informed of it, that's fair enough, but the process is governor, and then a governor's letter coming up. So,
Mr. Chairman, I was requested by Northern Wyoming Community College District this morning to bring this forward, and I'm doing it at their request. Certainly, your protocol may preclude it, and so I understand that.
I'll say that again. The process is that it goes in the supplemental request. If it doesn't meet the if you don't meet the deadline, you're always free to go to the governor to have the governor reevaluate and set up a governor's letter. And then we do give accommodation to appropriation members who anticipate pushing for something during markup to become advised. But otherwise, we won't undertake it. All right, next item.
Mr. Chairman, if you wish, I have just a brief report on the issue of sinking funds that came up this morning. Wyoming statutes, at least in the statutes related to community colleges, Wyoming statutes 2118.314, have a clause that require no less than 7% of the bond proceeds shall be used for the maintenance and repair and for facility obsolescence, and it establishes a means by which that is to be collected. And there are also references in related statutes to creation and the maintenance of reserves or sinking funds. That's in 2117.427. And so we do have currently, and we've done a very quick sort of inventory, and I just have a few of these, but for example, there's a $735,000 sinking fund on the estimated cost for the Allied Health and Trades project that was passed, a bond issue was passed by the voters in Fremont County in November. There is a sinking fund of about $300,000 for the purchase of the Wingate Hotel in Rock Springs by Western Wyoming Community College. There is a sinking fund of about $351,000 that is estimated for a project yet to be funded at Eastern Wyoming College, the Workforce Development Center, and then another estimate were a project to be completed at Eastern on their their Torrington campus. The prior project is in Douglas. This would amount to another almost $500,000 sinking fund. So as we receive capital construction requests using the commission process, there is a line item in the budget that's presented that includes a place for sinking funds. And so it's our understanding that that is still a requirement, and that any time capital constructions are paid for in district obligation bonds, we are responsible for ensuring that there is a sinking fund included.
Who manages the funds? And
Mr. Chairman, can I add to that? Plus, I think I can answer that question. With our tech center, it works out to about $2.4 million. That was set aside, which I think is the 7% roughly of that cost of that project, and it's the county that holds the funds and invests those.
I'm assuming that the county is holding and investing it, then it's restricted to pretty conservative investments? Or
I actually can't tell you, Mr. Chairman, what investment it is in, but it's all restricted for just the sinking fund maintenance of the building.
So I wondered, as we're getting the maximum amount of investment, because we may have created the funds, and if we put them in foundations, they would have the ability to get in the stock market, do other things. If we, by leaving them with the county, I'm guessing that we may even be just getting passbooks. Do you know the answer to that, Jim?
Mr. Chairman, I believe you're correct in that they are invested by the individual institutions. They are required. And there is some additional statutory language that may be of use, but I can't tell you. I can give you the citation, but I don't know what it says.
Why don't we take a look, if you wouldn't mind contacting the colleges, find out how they're investing those dollars, whether we ought to try to find a mechanism to have a more aggressive investment policy. I mean, if they're just sitting in banks and drawing passbook rates, that's not very prudent, but... We need to look in that, Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we probably just put them in the treasurer's office and put them in the local government pooled account. That'd give a little more flexibility, or in a fund within the treasurer's office and have them invested by the treasurer. That would be my recommendation.
I mean, you're right. We could give the, if they're not already doing it, give them authorization to put them in with the pooled investment dollars to get better investment rates. The pooled dollars, as you're right, would not have any stock investments. It just, but there's 4.5%, 5%, I think. And then if we'd have to do something structurally different to allow it to get that higher rate that we're seeing with the PMTF, which is closer to about 8%. So let's take a look at that, and then Mike or Senator Von Flader, you maybe look into that. Other questions on the sinking funds? Were you going to turn the public TV over to, or were you going to cover with that, or are you?
Mr. Chairman, it's certainly up to you as to whether we would continue with a discussion of the pending request from Central Wyoming, or whether you'd like to go through the budget and then come back to that.
Go through the debt budget, and we'll come back to that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it over to Ruby Calvert, and she can walk you through her part of the budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Co-Chair, and all members of the committee. There are a few new faces, and so I have asked your staffers to deliver an annual report on Wyoming PBS, because I realize and recognize that some of you may not be as familiar with what we do as others. And in here you'll find, for example, the number of staff that we have, and I think we are the smallest staff of any statewide public television station in one of the larger states. You also see there information on our budget, our expenditures. This is both our state and federal appropriation. And then I've also included the local programs that we've produced over the last year, as well as some of the local programs that we've acquired from independent and other producers, so that you can see we really work to be Wyoming's PBS station. Also in here you'll find our outreach efforts, the number of workshops we've done across the state for, a number, and I think you see there 8,400 children have been affected. And then you'll also see a report on the number of digital translators and transmitters that you have helped fund, and we really appreciate it. I think together we've built a very impressive network across the state. So our budget requests are, I believe, very straightforward. I'm back here asking for money that you already gave me once. And so that is the restoration of our endowment, our production endowment. And you'll recall in 2008, we came with an original request of $2.5 million. And you allocated $1.5 million, which was received in the state treasurer's office and which we've been matching diligently with estate funds and funds from pledge. And we have now raised and matched $942,243, which sits in an account with the state treasurer's office. Unfortunately, there was not language in the footnote of that appropriation that would have allowed us to match the entire amount in 5 years. It lacked that that extra time period, and so the production endowment was treated as a biennial request, and all the unmatched money reverted to the general fund on June 30. And so I'm asking for restoration of the amount that was reverted, $557,707. And just to let you know, the amount that is spinning off right now, because we have a total of $1.8 million now with the state treasurer, and that is spinning off for us about $60,000 a year. Now, if you look at the costs of our local content and what it takes to do production, our Capital Outlook series costs us about $25,000 a year. So the $60,000 that is being spun off right now by that $1.8 million covers our Capital Outlook series, covered the election debates this year, and also is covering our part of the expense of our weekly Chronicle series, which is a public affairs series. So that $60,000 means a lot to us. It may not seem like very much in the overall budget scheme, but for us it's quite a bit of money. So we're asking for the restoration of one-time funding of that $557,000. That's our priority one. And last time I made the mistake, Senator Nicholas, of not putting the priorities in order, I think I did it right this time. Priority two is a request for the continued build-out and adaptation of HD for our production truck. For those of you who have seen it parked out here while we're doing Capital Outlook, what we did with Phase 1, because you gave us $404,000 in 2008, and then because of the 10% budget cut, we lost about $20,000 of that, so we ended up spending $383,000 on four HD cameras, lenses, viewfinders, cabling, and associated equipment for the cameras. So what that leaves out, our production truck is still not HD capable. What we still need are, production switcher. We need to upgrade the satellite uplink so that we have the appropriate encoders and decoders and various other installation equipment. So for another $412,000, we can take the truck fully HD, and I really hope that you will consider this. We are providing an HD signal. That is our primary channel now that's going out to all the cable companies, is being broadcast. So if you are getting your signal over the air and you have an antenna and you go to 4.1, that's what you would find, our primary HD channel. And so we would like to be producing everything in HD. I think it's beautiful, and even though we're still having a few troubles with our cable companies and how they down-convert it, ultimately we're all going to be very proud of that. I guess one other thing I should mention is we did produce the Alan Simpson Show in HD, and it's going to go national on February 28th, so it'll be airing on I'm hoping about 90% of the PBS stations across the country on February 28th. So we really are doing quality work, and we've received a lot of awards this year. I won't go through all those, but the HD equipment is really priority two for us at this point. Our third item is an additional $1 million for our production endowment. And when we initially came to you and asked for the $2.5 million, Representative Frank Philp was sitting where Representative Berger is now and told me, he said, well, come back for the other million when you've adequately matched or begun on the first 1.5. So since we have raised almost $1 million, I'm back. And I'm asking for the other $1 million. I realize it may or may not happen, but I think it behooves me to make the request. And finally, I'd like to comment on the market salary adjustments, which have not been recommended by Governor Mead, but which Governor Friedenthal did recommend. For us, again, it doesn't seem like very much, but $58,000 for us is quite a bit of money. And while we haven't done a formal comparator for all of our staff, I do have a number of people who are really underpaid, and I really do need to make some market adjustments. They're in impact positions, and in fact, I have two people who work full-time for me 12 months a year, 40 hours a week, and then they go to work for Walmart for another 19 hours a week because they're having troubles making ends meet on their full-time salary. So, and then plus we have a producer position open that we've had open. We're now going through the third round of advertising for that in order to find a quality producer. I want to hire somebody who's not a quality producer. And so I think we really need to look at market adjustments for not everyone on our staff and probably not administration. It's for those people who, in impact positions where we want to keep quality high. And so I would really encourage you to look at the market adjustments that Governor Friedenthal recommended. They would certainly help us a lot. And if I had an opportunity to put together figures for you and some comparisons, I would certainly do that if you need information as Governor Mead suggested. So the only other thing I guess I would mention is that I did send, I think, to everyone a copy of our audience research booklet. And I mailed this to everyone, I think, in December to all legislators. And, I think the good thing about it is what we heard from our public, that that we're an important resource in Wyoming. And I just wanted to read one quick line. We believe that Wyoming PBS can help us make a better state. That's why we're answering these questions about what concerns us and what we value. And I think we are doing that. So I hope that you will help us continue to do that with our requests. I think that's it.
Any questions on any part of the public television on any of the three? I think it's two requests were granted and one was not. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Dr. Rose, I think we need to bring you back to talk about a couple of things. One is Senator Bebout wanted us to learn and have you explain to us the issue with respect to capital fund requests and how that he thinks that impacted Central Wyoming College. I pitched the softball for you. It was as soft as you can get. So Jim is going to explain to us now the issue with respect to capital facility funding and how that may have impacted CWC's project.
Mr. Chairman, if I misspeak, I'll trust Senator Bebout to correct me.
He's pretty shy.
In 2007, fiscal year 2007, the commission approved construction of a facility for Central Wyoming College that ultimately made it to a priority list that the commission assembled and presented and then was not funded. In subsequent years, Central Wyoming College has gone forward with the planning for that facility, and in November of last year, successfully passed a bond issue, a general obligation bond issue, to fund $11.5 million that would go toward the first phase of that facility. Because that occurred after the commission's budget submittal, and also because of a change in state statute that occurred in 2009, the commission was in a position to await the completion of a facility inventory and a prioritization instrument that is required by state statute now for the commission to assemble a priority list of any capital construction that goes forward to you. The commission was then requested in November after the successful bond issue by a number of legislators from Central Service Area as well as their Board of Trustees to consider augmenting the commission budget by an amount approaching $10 million to provide the additional funding to totally complete the Allied Health and Trades project. The commission sought legal counsel because of the wording in the statute. That is language that is directive. It is not permissive. It says the commission shall follow a process in terms of prioritization of projects that are brought forward to the legislature for funding. And so the commission, in a special meeting in December, voted not to send a letter, as was requested by Senator Bebout and his colleagues, to the governor, the governor-elect, members of this committee, requesting that their budget be augmented by that amount that Central Wyoming College was requesting for the additional funding of their project. According to our legal counsel, the commission's directives in statute require that they follow an administrative procedure that would have been violated had they requested this additional funding. And part of the complication of this is that the instrument that the commission will employ to make these priorities and compose a list that would come to the legislature for consideration is not completed. That was delayed, and the process of completion of that further complicated the commission's ability to assess Central's request, and so they were not comfortable with bringing forward this request from Central to the legislative process. The commission has not developed a position in terms of alternatives to inclusion in the commission's budget. Were the legislature, were this committee and the legislature to choose to provide funding outside of the commission's budget, the commission hasn't at least directed me to put forward to you their position in terms of whether or not they would support that. My sense from conversations with individual commissioners is they are sensitive and sympathetic to the need for Central to be able to proceed with this project fundamentally a year, potentially at least a year in advance of when funds would be available were their requests to be prioritized and presented and approved in the coming budget session in 2012. So we understand that there are economies to be had in terms of immediate construction and a variety of things that would benefit Central Wyoming College, but as I said, the commission has not formally addressed the issue as to whether they would support a formal request, but as I say, informally, I believe they do.
Let me ask questions just to tee it up for discussion. As a practical matter, we have provided some past funding over the course of the last 5 years for some institutions. Which institutions received general fund capital construction money over the past 5 or 6 years?
Mr. Chairman, and I have a copy which I distributed, I believe, to you and to Senator Bebout and some others who requested it. I can certainly make this available to the committee. It's a summary of all of the capital construction commencing in fiscal year 2006. It includes projects that are requested solely for authorization, as well as projects that are funded. But beginning in fiscal year 2006, the state of Wyoming, using agency funds, provided $1.5 million to the technology and industry wing at Western Wyoming Community College. They also provided $650,000 for an addition at Central Wyoming College for what was then Wyoming Public Television, now Wyoming PBS. The following year, they provided slightly over $1 million to Central Wyoming College for their Intertribal Education Community Center and $3.8 million for a new dormitory at Eastern Wyoming College. In 2008, there were three projects funded with state funds, $7.4 million for a health sciences building at LCCC. The Intertribal Education Center was $1,088,176. The new dormitory at Eastern Wyoming was $3,838,269. The following year, fiscal year 2008, session year 2007, there were three projects funded, $7,435,774. For the health sciences building at LCCC. These were measures that were included in Senate File 124. The $18,394,000 was provided to Northern Wyoming Community College District for their technical education center in Gillette. And $4 million was provided to Western Wyoming College, exactly $4 million, for a diesel mechanics addition at Western. Then in fiscal year 2009, $1.1 million was provided in additional funding for the Intertribal Education and Community Center at Central Wyoming College. And then most recently, in the last fiscal year, in session year 2009, $10 million was appropriated for the Gateway Center at Casper College.
Over that course of time, we put in $2.4 into the committee or CWC for the intertribal.
Mm-hmm.
And
about $2.2, yeah.
Now, my recollection with that one, that did not go through the rating system. My recollection is that did it go through the rating system or did it?
Mr. Chairman, your recollection is correct. They weren't. In fact, the first appropriation preceded the actual existence of any kind of a prioritization system. The second funding, that $1.1 million, was a consequence of House Bill 67. It didn't come through the commission's budget request process.
And over the course of the next year, members, new members, if you're not familiar with the finance system or the allocation for the community colleges, you need to take some time to inform yourself of that because it's important. And I think I'm probably the only one who doesn't have a community college in our county. But for those of you that are funding them through your counties, they compete for the same dollars. So if you allow one institution to grow, oftentimes it grows at the expense of its sister colleges. And so the idea was to get a handle on capital construction because we can overbuild. We are called upon to substantially fund community colleges now. And so the issue here is this issue, and if you would do your best to articulate the basis why CWC then believes that they were teed up to be the next building, if at all.
Mr. Chairman, I would respond to your question by saying that historically in this process, Central was relatively high on the priority list, but that priority list precipitated the projects that were actually funded in 2008, and Central's project was not on the final list that was granted appropriation. But I would also say that it's the position of the commission, and I believe it's clear now in statute because of the requirement that the commission follow a very prescribed process and use an instrument that is designed to evaluate capital construction needs based upon a variety of criteria, including things such as projected enrollment growth, job demand, all kinds of demographic information, as well as the condition and the size of the relative physical plants at the colleges. So this will be an instrument that's very comprehensive and will allow the commission, I think, to make a credible argument that the projects that are placed in a priority order have met the test of meeting the state's need. And that is the tie between this instrument and the statewide strategic plan that, House Bill 114 also mandated. So the idea that there is a sort of pecking order, a ranking system that if your project doesn't make it in a given year, then you're going to ascend to the top of the list, is belied by the process that we are now mandated to follow. And that means that if a project simply doesn't get funded in a given year, it may remain on the list, but it may not, because the commission is obliged to follow this prioritization process using this prioritization instrument every single time we bring a request forward, so that there isn't just a sort of your turn process that may have been employed in the past, but that is clearly antithetical to what the law says and what the strategic plan requires.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Dr. Rose, was House Bill 114 a product of one of the never-ending community task force?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Von Fladen, as painful as it may be for you to remember, yes, indeed, it was. The task force that operated for two, certainly there were 3 years altogether, but the first was a Blue Ribbon Commission, and unfortunately, Senator, you had the dubious distinction of serving on all three, but it is a process that was actually commenced a number of years ago and ultimately culminated, as you suggested, in House Bill 114 that was a product of the final task force.
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up on that? If I remember our final results, we never did come up with a true way of funding projects for community colleges. What we came up with was this metrics to put together. So should there be money available, it would be then in this order. So this project, let me get this straight. It was approved at about 07 for the square footage, a legislative approval.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't funded, but they did pass a bond based on that square footage. That was the $11.5 million. So that what the attempt is now is to make it a larger project. So they need square footage plus money, square footage approval, and additional money to go with it.
Mr. Chairman, the project itself has already been authorized and at the scale that is currently being anticipated. But the prior authorization did not include provision for funding. So what Senator Bebout was requesting in his letter to the commission was an actual request for state aid to fund that remaining portion of the project, which is $9,900,000, and it's very close to $10 million.
Because your senator will give you a little bit of time just to talk about it. If you come in, we're on the mic on live web now, and I guess, folks, generally our rule is that we don't invite people to come in and request outside the Gov's recs. But since I know you're going to make the request through there, you might as well let us know what you have in mind.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, very quickly, and what Dr. Rose presented to you is accurate. And my feeling all along on this particular issue was I did not want to attempt to do an end run around the commission. I thought I should go directly to them with a letter, explain our situation, our circumstances, which I truly think are unique, and get their input. And, of course, their response, and I read the Attorney General's opinion, I agree with what they came back to us with. The real problem in this issue, and what's happened, is if you recall when we did that particular bill in 09, we requested that rules be promulgated to allow them to come up with a system to go ahead and prioritize. And through no fault of the Community College Commission and Dr. Rose, it's still not done today. And we've had this huge delay in getting these rules implemented. And quite frankly, I think a lot of us in Fremont County, and when we did this and we voted for the bond and it passed, we thought possibly that these rules might be in place, that we could come to you through the correct process and allow it to be done on a ranking system. You know, the critical thing is here that the need is there. There's no question about it. We saw the need, and we went to the voters and got the voters to respond in a positive manner. I'm real hesitant to pick and choose, and I'm not a fan of if you don't get it this year because you're on the list, you're the next person. I think you really need to have in place some very good rules that set up a procedure to do that. But if you look at Central's position and what they've done by stepping up and passing the bond, and now what we have, in fact, out of that $11.5 million is about $10.5 million is for a smaller facility. Is it a facility that will help us out? Absolutely, and that's why the voters passed the bond. Is it what we really needed and why we went for the original authorization in 2007? No. I will tell you, Mr. Chairman, that I've been talking to the Board of Trustees and our college president because of the uniqueness of this situation and also the shortage of funds to say we don't need that $9.95 million because that's we really can do, I think, a good job, prioritize, make responsible cost-cutting measures, and come to you with a different number. Having said all that, if this committee is really in opposition to this idea and you just say, you know, we're not interested, I'm hesitant to move it forward because I really respect what you're trying to do, and as is the Community College Commission, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? I guess the reluctance that I have always is that if we turn it over to the taxpayers, the voters, local folks, to say, look, if you step up the mantle, we'll build the facility. I think Gillette will, in no time at all, be the not only the largest community college, but they'll be taking 90% of all the funding. I don't think CWC or anybody else would like that. And, I mean, you've got, it's a wonderful facility in Albany County. There's a school over in Albany County that's being paid for by Laramie County taxpayers because it works to their advantage to have more students and they get a bigger piece of the pie. So it's an interesting process that we're involved in, but with that comment, Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to step up to defend the altruism of Campbell County here. The possibility exists. I mean that, you know, those that could vote in their own portion would have a better chance. But I'm just questioning the timing. You knew the rules weren't in place in April, May, June, whenever we put these ballots together and voted for a lesser size project. So why was the thought there that somehow things would change before then? Or that the rules would go in place after the vote and change it. I guess I don't see how that would.
Mr. Chairman, I guess just more of a hope. We recognize that the reality of it is it probably would not be in place, yet the need is the overreaching and the real reason that we went to the voters of Fremont County to pass it because there's no question about the need. So rather than not pass it in a very tough climate, by the way, given the nature of what's going on with everybody's revenue streams, we thought that it was better to have this two-thirds of a loaf, if you will, and because the need is really the overriding factor and just the thought that it might be there. And, of course, we can always come back later after the fact, after we have these rules in place, and resubmit. And now we've already built the building that we have, and the cost obviously will go up because we'll have to go in and change what we've done. And to wait is not a good idea either because the money's in place. The contract prices are good now, so we're a little bit between a rock and a hard spot. If this committee and the legislature chooses to do nothing, will we build the building based on our bonds? I think we will, and we should. Will we be back in front of you again to try to fix it the way it should have been done in the first place? Probably. Thank you.
Dr. Rose, Jim, while we didn't invite people to supplement their budget, UW did supply some information on salary. Did you put together some salary information? Why don't you just has it already been provided to us?
Mr. Chairman, I believe either the Wyoming Association of Community College Trustees or the presidents have a spreadsheet that they can
distribute
to you.
Why don't you make sure that gets distributed to us and the Now, we're not going to take testimony from everybody because I know what the answer is. I mean, nobody ever has enough salaries money. But if you'd get that data out to us, and while you're here, would you introduce the presidents that are here?
I'll certainly give it a try.
Not if we miss somebody, they have to introduce themselves.
Then I'll be in trouble. Mr. Chairman, from Northern Wyoming Community College District, Dr. Paul Young. From Western Wyoming Community College, Dr. Carla Leach. From Northwest College, Dr. Paul Prestwich. Interim President from Laramie County Community College, Dr. Marlene Tigner. From Central Wyoming College, Dr. Joanne McFarland. And behind me, from Casper College, Dr. Walt Nolte. Oh, and from the Far East, Eastern Wyoming College, Dr. Tom Armstrong.
Was there anything else on your budget request that you covered everything? Questions? Kurt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In committee, I could have brought this up, this issue about certified nursing assistants and testing, I think, under Board of Nursing, but had a previous engagement yesterday and couldn't do it under Board of Nursing, and so I'd like to ask you, Jim, are you aware of the problem with certified nursing assistants testing and from your programs at community colleges, and what have you done that we could look forward to, I guess, if you are?
Mr. Chairman, it hasn't been brought to my attention directly. That doesn't mean that it hasn't been communicated to some of the staff that are with the agency. And I suspect because all of our colleges engage in the CNA training and testing, that it's something on their radar. But my team program leader for academic programs, Dr. Joe McCann, is here, and that's certainly something that I will ask him to take up with the academic vice presidents just to make sure that we are involved, and certainly if there's information that you would like us to supply to you, I can try to do that. But I am not aware of what the problem is or what is being attempted in by way of a solution.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, to make you and the committee aware of it, and I'll talk to the Board of Nursing at my own time, is that we've got a problem. We've got all of these great programs out there, the community colleges for CNAs, and the problem is that by the time the Board of Nursing gets around to administering the test, it could be more than weeks, sometimes months. They can't get into a job that they're qualified to do because the Board of Nursing is basically dragging their feet. And so it's going to impact your enrollment, I think, in CNAs because you're not going to have that success outcome that you're actually, you know, looking for and telling the students it's available. And we've got a lot of interaction with the different health care providers and nursing homes across the state where they can't get the people that are qualified to work because the Board of Nursing is dragging their feet on this. And so I think it's something that we need to get the commission and the Board of Nursing together, try to get something done on that. And I just wanted to take this time to make you aware of it. And I apologize to the committee for yesterday.
Can we get those salary sheets distributed? Don't worry about getting them all stamped if they're not stamped. Just stamp one or two.
Mr. Chairman.
Why don't you make sure that Jimmy, you have one of them?
I do have one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator
Meyer, thank you for sharing that information. As you all know, we are also responsible for administrating the Wyoming Investment and Nursing Program. And so we have a fairly frequent relationship with the Wyoming Board of Nursing, and we will pursue that avenue as well to see if we can't come to some understanding as to what the problem is, and certainly we'll work on it.
Back to this sheet then, would you take us through it, Jim? Just tell us how to read it.
Mr. Chairman, I believe
I've got it there, what number did you enter in on it so we can write our number on it? Was there a number entered on it? Number 36 for agency 57. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just by way of preface, these data come from the Mountain States Association of Community Colleges, which is a regional organization that collects and distributes to their member organizations data on what has been an annual basis, although they attempted to change the way in which they collect and report and analyze the data this last year. So this is information that's for 2009, for the last fiscal year. But what you see on that first page is both national average and regional average. The regional average is reflective more of these comparator institutions in the Mountain States region. And then the state's seven community colleges average salaries for those categories that are shown on this first page. And then the departure from the national average, with those figures in bold being cases in which Wyoming Community College salaries exceed the average for either the nation or the region. And then on the following sheet, you can see a breakout of a whole variety of job-specific job positions that analysis has been provided. And as you can see, some of the data are not present. So, for example, we don't have regional averages for some of these categories simply because those data aren't available. But you can make comparisons to most all of the national averages, and it goes over onto the following page. And then the classified staff is on the fourth page, and then there are some explanation of the chart that is on the final page. And, Mr. Chairman, if you have specific and detailed questions, these data actually came to us courtesy of Central Wyoming College, and so if there are specific questions about how the data may have been compiled or what they represent, I may have to defer to Dr. McFarland. Mr. Chairman, we are, we know enough to be dangerous, I guess. So. Okay. Thank you.
Governor, in his message, provides and states that he's not recommending any more money for school capital construction until the delivery method systems are sorted out. There are really two systems of construction out there. One is the construction manager at risk, where you do a design build project. You select an architect, a construction manager at risk. And then projects are performed for a guaranteed maximum price with sometimes an incentive back to the contractor who delivers the project at lower dollars. The other is the traditional design-build program. The CMR process was largely lobbied by incidentally, ironically, the school folks that one of the largest contractors is the Grote House. Grote House was an active lobbyist to get that bill passed. Now, as the CMR system is being implemented, people have been upset. We've had we'll get you the comments from the hearings or meetings that we had before the session. A couple of anecdotally things that we're learning is that there is oftentimes with the CMR system there, or even with, and this can also apply with the design build process, entities are becoming certified as a Wyoming contractor. They're supposed to have a percentage of subs that are Wyoming subcontractors. We're being told that's not being monitored such that the construction manager will open the bids, and he says, I've got 60-70% Wyoming subcontractors. Then they turn around and shop those numbers, and pretty soon all the subs on the project are all from Colorado, and none of them are from Wyoming, even though they may have gotten a local preference. It appears that nobody's watching the shop with respect to that. We had earlier heard that, for example, the part of the reason we're seeing a lot of the out-of-state contractors is because they're hungry. They're coming in with a lower margin of profit and bidding these projects down to on lower margins. Our contractors are now saying that's not what's actually happening. Is this, instead, they're working on the same margins, but they bid the project low, and then they're turning out they start moving in equipment and HVAC equipment, lights that are cheaper or woodwork that's cheaper, and ultimately driving down the quality of the product that we're getting in. So they ultimately, they're making their profit by delivering less quality profit. Those issues, when we hear from Ken Dari, will describe and say, look, that's really not our problem. Every time that we've come back to say what's causing all the big concerns, they've come back to the University of Wyoming. There are contractors in Wyoming who claim that they were the low bidder on the Wildcat or Suites. They were not selected. Instead, they were selected an out-of-state firm. The local contractors are accusing the out-of-state firm of coming in and not accepting the subcontractor's quotes. They're going out and shopping the quotes even after the bid letting. Then we're told that if the out-of-state contractors say, if you complain to UW, we'll blackball you, so you can't. We don't want you. We're hearing that while the university pays on a monthly payment schedule, the Wyoming subcontractors are often waiting 3 and 4 months to receive their payments. And we're having some of the similar issues with respect to A&I. So the governor has said he doesn't want to see any capital construction until these issues are resolved. So they're serious. And so we'd given a little bit of this to Dr. Buchanan, asked him, among other things, to have maintenance people meet with the construction management people, make an honest assessment of did we get the quality and grade of equipment that we thought we were, and maybe look into some of these other allegations. There is a concern that, particularly with UW and A&I, that they're going almost exclusively now to out-of-state architectural firms for these construction manager at risk. They're already lined up with partners, if you will, that are out-of-state construction managers, so our construction manager, our crews don't even get pre-qualified to be parts of these groups, and so as long as you're going to out-of-state engineers and contracting or engineering firms or architectural firms, and you're using the CMAR process, they're always going to go to their historic partners at the exclusion of Wyoming contractors. So by not doing a traditional design then bid, then the Wyoming contractor never even gets through the pre-qualification process and a chance to play for the project. So that's what I would describe as an overview of the complaints that we're hearing. And so with that background, Dr. Buchanan, what are you seeing and what's coming to your attention at your level?
Mr. Chairman, we took your comments to heart and have in the last week, several weeks, taken a hard look and had a number of conversations with folks who are responsible for this part of the university. I have to my right Doug VanSant, the Vice President for Administration. All of the capital construction and building at the university falls under his purview. He has looked into as many of these allegations, if you will, as we have been able to, and I would ask that he comment on what we've just heard. And I think I would tell you that we certainly don't agree with the characterizations of the way we do business, and oftentimes I would say it's not difficult for anecdote to turn into fact after it's been repeated two or three times. That's the reason that I asked Doug to look hard at how we operate with our construction programs and our facilities planning, and I'd like to ask him to address some of your comments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll try to, if I might, I'll start with some general comments about the CMAR process, and then I will try to provide some examples of specific information with regard to the percentage of work that has been awarded to resident as opposed to non-resident contractors on several recent major projects. And we'll, of course, be happy to provide you with any additional information that we're not able to cover today. Perhaps the first thing is just to say, for us, the CMAR process has enabled us to complete a number of major projects in specified time frames within budget and deliver the program that the building was originally proposed to address. And with these big complex projects, getting the program need addressed first, getting it done in the time frame we need, getting it done within budget, and doing those things cost effectively, not just taking the highest bid, but actually what's the bid for the lowest dollars that meets the full program requirement. And then to that, we have, I would just say we've, as a result of conversations with you, Mr. Chairman, and others, we have tried to increase our efforts to make known to resident contractors the projects that we have on the horizon, potential projects, and the opportunities that they may present to those firms. We held a meeting in the fall. We will hold another one in the spring. It's an open meeting. And in addition to talking about the opportunities to participate in future capital projects, we make them aware of projects that are underway on which they may choose to submit bids for subcontract work. All of which is about trying to help them be able to come forward with competitive bid proposals. Key to that is understanding our architectural and engineering performance standards and guidelines. So we're trying to do what we can. We've stepped up our efforts to try to provide additional information. That's looking forward. Looking back, I can say, again, the CMAR process, and let's just use a specific example here. In the case of the College of Business, I think there is some confusion about how the design process works and then what the CMAR actually does. With the design team, which is the architectural firm, we begin by providing them with our performance specifications, for example, for building systems, HVAC systems, as an example. And those specifications are developed by our central energy plant utilities people, our engineers that run the utility system, in consultation with our architectural team. So it's not one group or the other. It's both groups that are working on developing what our specifications and performance standards are. That information goes to the architectural firm that wins the bid to develop the project in the case of the College of Business. They have subcontractors, and since we talked about HVAC, there's a mechanical and engineering component of that larger capital project. That firm which won that bid is then responsible to design the project such that it meets the university's performance standards. Then we draw a bright line between the design and then the execution, and that's where the CMAR contract comes into play. When that firm is hired, they can't undo the performance standards or design specifications. So they don't have the option of going back and saying, we're going to redo your design specs. So what I'm saying is there's a design aspect of this, and then there's an execution. And the CMAR is responsible for carrying out the execution. They bid the work, and I would say we are not unaware of what's going on with bids from subcontractors. So, for example, they come back in, and a university team looks at the bids that are received by the CMAR for a particular type of work. So, and in looking back at some of the bids, no one, at least on my staff, and I'm going to preface this by saying we are compiling data to be able to speak to every subcontract, the resident, non-resident nature, the dollars involved, to be able to tell you the exact numbers of subcontracts and contracts that have gone each direction. But to the best knowledge of my architect, university architect, and in the case of the project managers who work with the Central Energy Plant, we've never received bids from a firm that are a dollar or $100 below whatever a resident firm may have offered. So I'm just letting you know that some of the information that you're sharing with us is not consistent with what we have heard or seen in terms of bids coming back. But until I have gotten every single one of these for the last, we'll say, 5 years, so every major project, and have compiled that into a tabular form, I don't want to suggest that there may not be something in there that's different than the way I'm characterizing it.
I think we're going to have to drill down a little bit to the suppliers, too, because what has been told to me by people that supply things like anywhere from your HVAC to your doors, your windows, and everything else is that if you have a out-of-state construction manager at risk, he'll provide specifications, or the architecture will provide specifications to the out-of-state construction manager. And they'll be able to tailor those specifications that says you need product X type of HVAC, or you need this kind of lock, or this kind of door, or this kind of window. And in many cases, those things aren't even supplied by a Wyoming supplier, or in some cases they're not supplied by a Wyoming supplier, or they've got their buddy out of state who just happens to be in that business. So once you take the first step out of the state, basically all they do is they have their team out of state, and everything that from the suppliers to the doors to the bolts to the washers to the glass to the HVAC, everything is bought out of state, and our subcontractors are pretty much locked out of the deal. So, you know, it might not happen in every case, but if you drill down far enough, and it's a normal thing of business. You do business with your friends. And so when we have these out-of-state contractors or architects that come in, they're going to do business with their friends. Their friends are out-of-state. And we don't have that preference statute even taking any effect or control within our state. So maybe we've got some statutory changes to make, but if you could really tell us how it's actually working from your standpoint, so it isn't just anecdotal from our suppliers and our architects and our construction managers in here, we'll get a better idea.
we're not going to solve. We need to go back in at 2. We're going to come back at 4 because at 3 o'clock there is a recalibration school at 302. Members are encouraged to be there. You feel like getting a recalibration schooling. And then we'll be back here at 4 to meet with education, the balance. Well, we got to hear from them today, too. So we'll bring Facilities Commission back in. We probably ought to do Facilities Commission first and then go to education. So we'll do Facilities Commission first, then we'll do Department of Education. What I'd like for Doug, is that right? Doug, for you to do is to meet. I'm going to give you a sheet that came from a summary of the meeting. I'd like you to get together with Rich Cathcart. If you can be available, be here during his presentation so that we can continue this. Truth is the people are upset. They're angry. These are tax dollars, and we can't ignore it. We're not going to ignore it. But we also don't want to put in a budgetary requirement. And I do think we're going to put some budgetary language in to make sure that the executive branch is doing it the way we want to do it. But we also don't want to do anything that's imprudent. Jim, the issue, a lot of complaints we got were on the Gateway project from the ABC contractors up in Casper. It might be worthwhile conferring with them just to figure out, make sure that you know that you've got a heads up and you're attending to it because it affects you as well. But it's going to affect school facilities. Facilities Commission is going to be here today at 4, and part of their presentation is going to talk about their construction delivery systems. If you want to be here, we invite you to be here there. I don't expect Dr. Buchanan for you to hang around all that, but I do want to make sure it's on your radar screen and that people are not happy and you are getting the focus of it. And some of it's so specific, and I agree with you, it can get anecdotally recirculated, and it gets worse and worse each time, but it's there. But, you know, my impression is and I walk around those job sites at least every weekend just to see what is there, and rarely do you see a lot of anything but Colorado plates or out-of-state plates, and you have to ask yourself, why aren't you seeing it? I know there are kids looking for construction jobs in the summer. I can tell you I'll bet you they offer zero jobs for Wyoming kids. So if there's students being employed, they're being employed from out-of-state, and they're not getting from UW, and so there are people complaining. It gets more complicated because your stimulus dollars didn't go out to maintenance crews. You put them in you consolidated them, went out to larger contractors, and a lot of the contractors who anticipate those dollars got starved out for a year or two, and they don't like it, and I don't think the community likes it either. So if you could make arrangements with Don and our staff to make sure that when Rich Cathcart's going to be here, if you could be available and be part of that discussion, we'd sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming, sticking around.
Stick around for 4 today, too.
Yes, sir.